before you say, I want out, you have to jump into your own life. You have to jump into yourself and dig deep and figure out, is it the relationship making me unhappy or is it where I am? And I have to tell you that a lot more often than not, it's where the person who has given the most up is more unhappy with themselves than actually their own partner. And once they start to unravel that and put a plan in place, they find their relationship comes back with more meaning and they're able to renew how they feel about their partner. Now, it doesn't work out for everybody, but before you end something that you started, at least figure out where you're headed.
Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. Certified divorce coach and credentialed mediator Paulette Rigo invites you to grab a favorite beverage, find a cozy seat, soothe your soul, and take a listen. This podcast was created and inspired by our courageous journeys, love for connecting with others, and having meaningful conversations that teach, impact, and heal through sharing our stories. In each episode, Paulette will be joined by some of the most experienced and compelling experts in all things divorce and transformation. Listen to prepare and thrive through the toughest chapters as we reveal our hardships, celebrate our lessons learned, and see the future clearly with encouragement, hope, and joy. Leave feeling empowered and prepared to approach life and maintain our dignity no matter what. Each podcast episode focuses on sharing real conversations from real life situations. Isn't it time you thrived?
Hello and welcome to today's show on the Thriving in Chaos Project. For those of you that know me, you need no introduction. My name is Paulette. For those of you that don't, my name is Paulette Rigo, family mediator and certified divorce coach and consultant and host of the Thriving in Chaos Project. It is a pleasure to have you join me, whether it be right after the recording, or as I'm finding more and more people are using the interviews that I do with experts in their fields as a resource, a guide, a tool, and an education to learn more about the do's and don'ts of all things divorce. So, but today I have the honor of introducing Leslie Montanil. She is a 30-year experienced matrimonial law attorney. But she also brings her own decades-long marriage, attorney, and relationship coach experience to the table. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you for having me, Paulette. It's such an honor to be here and speak with you today.
I appreciate it. One of the things I'm asked very often is, who do I turn to when I need legal advice about divorce? And not necessarily wanting to jump right into hiring an attorney immediately or getting overwhelmed with that. But it is a big question because it's, well, a commitment and it's expensive. And many people are fearful of just picking up the phone, going to a website or getting a referral, making an appointment for a consult, and not necessarily even knowing what to ask them because there's just no, well, I don't know, list of things to ask them. So how do you first address the questions that newbie is, I guess that's the appropriate word, right? When they either send you an email or you get a referral or they make an appointment to chat with you or speak to you, and you can tell they're a little bit nervous about it, but what is that initial conversation like? And what do you suggest people ask you when they're first being introduced to the whole world or process of divorce?
So I get a lot of phone calls from a lot of mostly women, I have to say. In my field, that's been my reputation. I help women, mostly, sometimes men, call me, and they're at a stuck place in their life, in their marriage, feeling unhappy, down, maybe confused, and not really sure what their next steps are or if there should be any next steps. So for me, my first question is to ask them what's going on in their life at that moment in time, so I can listen and hear what they have to say before I say anything else. Mm-hmm. And usually when the story unfolds, I find it's really important to guide the person I'm speaking with to really look deep inside themselves, to really ask, am I unhappy in my relationship, or am I unhappy with where I am in my life? Mm-hmm. I never urge anyone to make a dramatic step such as hiring a divorce lawyer before figuring out their life. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean your life 3 months from the day you have a conversation with me. I mean, look at the broader spectrum. What is it that you want your life to look like in 3 years? Give yourself some time, because let's say you're the stay-at-home parent, which women still are predominantly the stay-at-home parent, who have given up something, a career, schooling, something that they love to raise a family. And let's face it, being a parent is the hardest job in the world. And it doesn't really matter whether you're the woman, but the stay-at-home parent who gives up something, they get lost in the shuffle because you devote your time and your energy to your family, and it's very hard to find your way back. And a lot of these stay-at-home parents had careers, and sometimes really big careers. And I don't suggest you go back. I don't believe in going backward. You have to evolve. You have to take all those skills and roll them into something else. And as children get older and you find you have more time on your hands, you start to look at your relationship. And instead of looking at yourself, you're looking at what you have with your significant other. And you become maybe unhappy, or you don't feel as connected, but you're not doing the work on yourself first. So I always make a suggestion that if you're in that type of position, first figure out what it is you truly want for yourself the rest of your life. Where do you want to be? Do you want to go back to school? Do you want to go back to work? Do you want to start a charity? Do you want to, you know, help children? You know, do you want to be, you know, the neighborhood watchdog, or whatever it is that resonates with you? Mm-hmm. And once you figure that out and you make a plan, maybe you start to see that the relationship you're in is not truly soured. Maybe it's how you were feeling about yourself. And I always put this caveat in: I am not referring to relationships that have any sort of abuse, physical or emotional, because if you're in that type of relationship, then we would be having a completely different conversation on how you're going to plan your exit.
Yeah.
So I'm just talking about the typical couple that gets together and someone compromises a lot of themselves, and then 5, 10, maybe even 15 years down the road says, "Where am I?" And before you say, "I want out," you have to jump into your own life. You have to jump into yourself and dig deep and figure out, is it the relationship making me unhappy, or is it where I am? And I have to tell you that I find a lot more often than not, it's where the person who has given the most up is more unhappy with themselves than actually their own partner. And once they start to unravel that and put a plan in place, they find their relationship comes back with more meaning. And they're able to renew how they feel about their partner. Now, it doesn't work out for everybody, but before you end something that you started, at least figure out where you're headed. So that's usually my first conversation with people. And I think that if maybe you're in a different realm, maybe you have a career of your own and you know you're unhappy and you want out and you're not sure what the questions are, that I think that what you need to ask yourself is, what are our finances together and what will they look like when they're separate? Mm-hmm. Will we be able to support two households if there are children? Minor children. And when I mean minor, I mean children all the way up through college. Will we be able to support two households? Will we be able to support two grocery bills, cleaning bills, car insurance, homeowners insurance? Those are the questions you need to ask yourself before diving into splitting everything up. And do I know where all the passwords are to all the accounts if I don't have them? You know, we used to say, do you have all the statements? Now we say, do you have all the passwords?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like there's a whole list of questions. I actually do provide them on my information website, and it's all free, that the questions you should ask yourself before going to a lawyer's office or a mediator's office to break up a relationship that you have. I always feel that it's better to be prepared and in the know, because knowledge is power, than to be scared and afraid. I don't believe that anyone should enter the breakup of a long-term relationship and marriage from a position of weakness. I feel that you have to feel strong in your position and feel empowered and know that you can and will get through something like that if that's what you want. And it does not have to be a bitter battle to the end. There is a much better way. And I just want to say, most attorneys who are in this field do give, you know, a free consultation. But if you're not comfortable with that, there's certainly mediators who you can call who are not there to be on one side or the other that will also give you a free consultation and answer many of your questions. And then, of course, there's all types of coaches, relationship coaches, divorce coaches, love coaches that can also give you some insight before you cross that line. But you just can't stick your head in the sand.
No, never do that. It's easy to kind of think like, oh, it'll get better, you know, but as we've learned in this world, typically anytime you dig bury your head in the sand, it gets worse. And I do love the fact, Leslie, that you provide that list or those, you know, those things to consider, because there are a lot of questions to ask professionals that you may need in the divorce process. And when I wrote Better Divorce Blueprint, I decided that I wanted to designate at least one third of the book to preparing. That's why chapters 1, 2, and 3 are before divorce, and 4, 5, and 6 are during, and 7 and 8 are after. There is a lot to take into consideration, as you hinted at, with the budget and what can you afford, and all of those, the passwords and all those other things. And it isn't just an attorney, you know, it also involves the mortgage and the marital home and a realtor and a financial expert, a tax accountant, insurance. I mean, there's so many different aspects of the divorce picture, but I think that initial most trepidatious or scariest conversation that most people have is like, how do I find a lawyer? What do I ask them and all that? So it's nice to know that you and many others try to make it a little bit more comfortable. And you do say that you break the mold. You don't quite fit the mold of the conventional divorce lawyer. So like, what do you mean by that? A lot of my friends are attorneys. So I love your take on that. So what actually is the mold of a conventional divorce attorney? And we can be candid here, right? So, and why are do you not fit into that that nice little, you know, frame?
Well, I'm going to say this. Law is a business like any other business. If someone comes to a traditional divorce attorney and hires them, their goal is to get them not only what is fair, but the most. And sometimes, and it's like any profession, there are a lot of attorneys out there and they do fight to the death. If you've never seen Marriage Story, you know, it's with Scarlett Johansson. It's an interesting take on what happens at the end with her lawyer when she requests, I only want 50% of the time, and she ends up with 75% of the time with her children, you know, at the expense of her ex-husband, but that was the lawyer's doing. That wasn't the client's request. And I do think divorce lawyers do get a bad rap because they are really good at what they do, which is fighting for their client. But to what end and to what expense do you do that? Mm-hmm. I have always felt that when you come together with somebody and marry them and have children, you're responsible, both sides. Everyone's responsible. If you want out, then you have to walk out responsibly. And that fighting to the death only ruins your life and the life of your children. And I always say, I'm really not on your side, I'm on your kids' side. So if you have no children and all you're fighting over is money, then what's the fight over if you have it to fight over? You know, so for me, when my client comes to me, I give them 20 minutes to sit on the pity pot and cry about why it's not working out and boo hoo and why they did this to me and et cetera, et cetera. And then I say, okay, it's over now. If you've made this decision to move forward, we're going to move on with a plan. We're going to come up with a game plan for your life, for what you want, and we're going to do it in the most way that we can. So the problem is that I always try to do the right thing by my client, but I can't control who's on the other side. So if you are someone who is not in a good financial position, then you're always coming from behind and you're going to fight for every last dollar because you're going to be on your own. And depending on your significant other on the other side, either they're going to be giving or they're not. And if they're not, let's face it, as you know, they can make your life a living hell.
Mm-hmm.
So where I differ is before I have my clients jump the gun, I really do have them come up with a plan if they're not in a good financial position for them to stabilize their life before executing a divorce. And that might take 2 to 3 years. But if you know who you're married to, if you know that it's going to cost you a lot of your savings or your home or the expense of your children, because they're going to fight you tooth and nail, then you might have to take a step back and reorganize your life. Because I always say, women leave when they have money. Men leave when they have someone else. And that's really a sad reality. So I don't look to break up families. I look to help the less moneyed, more vulnerable spouse repair their life first. Then who knows? Who knows what happens when that life's repaired? You know, maybe they don't leave. Maybe that marriage gets saved. So I don't take everyone who walks through my door. Okay. My practice has always been a boutique practice of 10 clients or less per year, because I devote my time to not just helping my clients exit a failed marriage. I help my clients succeed at a better life. And that takes a lot of time because it's one-on-one, which is what led me to coaching, because I was doing it anyway, right, in my practice.
Yeah.
So it led me to that. And there's so much more satisfaction in seeing people thrive in their life, mm-hmm, as a person who's fulfilling their dreams, wants, and desires than seeing somebody broken, emotionally broken, and maybe financially over a relationship that ended long before they ever walked through my door.
Right.
You know, I think it's really important for people to understand that some relationships are meant for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Some are meant to be 4 or 5 years or give you your children. And it's okay when it doesn't last.
Mm-hmm.
You are lovable. If you were already married once, chances are you could be married 2 or 3 more times if that's what you want. But you are lovable, but you have to have the security from within and understand this is your life. We only get one.
Mm. And it's, I couldn't have said it better. Very nice. Yeah, so true. Well, I think one of the things that also sets you apart, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but One of the things that also sets you apart is the fact that you are not only an attorney, but you are also a mediator. Although that's getting to be a little bit more common than it used to be, but you're also a relationship coach. So you wear many hats, but the one I really love is that you're also an author. And that was one thing that made me really excited to meet you and interview you, because I too am an author. And I do think that all women, maybe men too, have at least 2 to 3 books hidden inside of them that need to be born and created. We all have a story, and that story isn't just to, I don't know, share because you want to say you're an author. You share that story to help and guide others that need that sense of connection and that sense of feeling not alone. I can't tell you how many books, probably up on my shelf somewhere over there, that I have read and have said, aha, I'm not crazy. I am okay. Like, other women go through this crap too. So when I heard about your book called The Cult of the Black Card, I was like, what the hell is this about? So you two have written a memoir, and memoirs are tricky. And I love your subtitle, A Divorce Lawyer's Tale of True Love, Lust, and Lies. So what is this book? Tell us about this book, The Cult of the Black Card. Why did you write it? And let us know.
So I started writing a long, long time ago. I wrote when I was 12 or 13, but I really started writing in 2010. I wanted to write like a roundtable conversation with women, because I've seen so much and I can't make half of it up. I just felt that and like you, I believe everyone has a story to tell, but not everyone's willing to put their story out there.
Isn't that the truth, sister?
You know, not everyone's willing to put their story out there. And I find that people see the facade. For me, they see the lawyer. They see the husband of 24 years that I married in 4 months. That's the true love. We're in business together. We're business partners for over 20 years. They see the facade, but they don't see what it took to get there. Mm-hmm. They don't know where I started as a child or what my dreams were. And what propelled me, and what, you know, twists and turns I took in my career that brought me to where I am today. And interjected in that are the people I've met, the clients I've helped, and obviously the names are changed to protect the stories. I mean, I had a client kidnapped the day after she hired me. So things like that. And I have seen it. I feel like I've seen it all. And I felt that although I'm normally a very private person, as my friend who read my book and called me and said, crying, that she loved it, but I'm so private, like she couldn't believe I authored this book. I said, well, if I'm going to help anybody, I have to be able to share my personal challenges, mm-hmm. pain, and successes, so that people can identify mm-hmm. with that and say, wow, I can do that too. You know, we always look at what people have on the outside, the Instagram, the Snapchat, the social media, and you're thinking that person has a wonderful life. And most of the time they don't. They're pretty insecure. They just want you to think that. Mm-hmm. Or they desperately want to fit into a crowd, like the cult of the black card, but yet they have nothing behind that. And when you strip that away, it's like a house of cards. It just collapses. So I felt that I had a story to tell. I was actually adopted, or I was born between two families with lawyers, and how that made me feel like the chosen child who had to always be number one and the best. And whatever I did had to be of excellence, and never stop striving for that. And the very beginning of the book, I talk about this client, well, who never became a client, and his name is Nick. And what that did for me in my career and how it made me pivot to really just helping women, because no one should ever be with a Nick. I'm just enticing you to read this. I can't tell you the title because it's a little salacious in that chapter, but it's really a book of perseverance, joy, love, hope, and where there's a will, there's a way. And how it brought me to really dig deep within myself to realize that my calling was just to help others by sharing what I've learned about life. Loss. I lost the first love of my life when I was 21. I met him when I was 16. And my role in that. And my challenges in wanting to work in entertainment and having many ups and downs in that field. And how even when I learned matrimonial law, tried, and that was early on in my career, my very first year out of law school, tried to go a different route, but I kept getting brought back in because I guess I felt that I was helping people at like the lowest time of their life. And what I had witnessed and seen as a young lawyer really molded and shaped my views as how I would practice law and help others. So there's laughter in the book, tears, maybe some hooray moments. And I feel that when people read it, people have emailed me from all over the world that men and women, which I was surprised by the men. I didn't know that it would resonate with men of all ages from 17 to 80, that it made them take a step back and view their life, their relationships in a different way. And maybe in some ways view women in a way they never had before. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel really honored and grateful. And it's kind of like one helping one person at a time, you know, hoping that people will read more of it and find that parts of it resonate with them and make them realize that, you know, every single life is a valuable life and worth it, really worth it.
Well, thank you for that. I jumped right in. I love the fact that your prologue is called Never Settle. I have a little saying that I say is always, you always get what you settle for. Of you know, that kind of, so initially you just pulled me right in. And then you wrote on August 26, 1964, I was born, you know, I was born August 18th, 1964. And I was like, wow, I got to meet this woman. And I'm, you know, I don't know, coincidentally, one of my sisters used to live in Lenox Hill in Manhattan. So as soon as I was like Lenox Hill, I was like, oh, I know that too. And before I knew it, I kept turning pages and pages. And there are a lot of similarities in our life. And there are so many similarities in everyone's lives, ladies and gentlemen. This isn't just for ladies, but we have a common thread of the hero's journey. When I studied Joseph Campbell, thank you, Pat Verducci, Kelly Notaris, and many of my writing coaches way back when I learned to, well, besides having a degree in journalism, but really understood the science and the craft of writing a book in 2014 in Bali. I went there for 45 days and just engulfed myself in the world of writing and storytelling. We all have that hero's journey of you're the hero of your own story. And of course, we go through the ordinary world and eventually we find the elixir. We return with the elixir. And I love the fact that you eloquently say that, you know, you have to be the author of your own story. And the question is giving yourself permission to live your best life. Do you give yourself permission to live your best life? Because ain't no one gonna do it for you. Your husband, your lover, your friend, your parents, your siblings, you have to take the steering wheel and thrive, like you said, regardless of the chaos or not. Hence the why I called this podcast the Thriving in Chaos Project. It isn't just the Surviving in Chaos Project. We don't want you to just survive. We want you to survive beyond your wildest dreams to the point where you can wake up every morning and say, this is living. Not that they're not going to be, you know, trials and tribulations and failures, but it is worth the journey. I have conversations with so many people, like you eloquently said, Leslie, earlier, that, you know, where are you now? Give me a snapshot. Like, tell me what's going on. Give me an assessment. And they're just sort of treading water, living in ambivalence, and they're not living their best life. And divorce is, in my opinion, please correct me, is another word for, or catalyst for change. It is, you know, really a conduit from getting from one part of your life that isn't either healthy. Like you said, we talked about abuse situations. Those are a completely different situation. And I do talk a lot about that in the beginning of my book with the 21 most common reasons people divorce, the 7 different types of divorce, excuse me, of abuse. There are so many things you need to learn, but when it comes down to it, are you excited about your life? Is your partner excited about you and your life together? And do the two of you have a congruent lifestyle and goals that are mutually satisfying? And, you know, do your core values and core goals and aspirations overlap a little bit? It is really hard to be in a relationship where both of you are living parallel lives and not living on the same table. And that's not to say many marriages can't be saved or worked on or improved. I'm proud to say that I've saved many marriages, as I know you too, Leslie, being a relationship coach. Nobody in their right mind, and or well, there are some, you know, are pro-divorce. You know, even family law attorneys aren't like, yeah, get a divorce. You know, like we don't roll that way. You know, I mean, if you're in a happy marriage, awesome. You know, I'm happily remarried. So, you know, a lot of people must learn my story and hear about me and think, oh, she's just pro-divorce, totally pro-divorce, and they just got that all wrong. So the being an author, I think, adds a deeper lens into your life and your experience. And I commend you for that and loved what you said about that. So just tell us, as we sort of, you know, wrap up our conversation, what is the cult of the black card? Or is it a mystery? Maybe you don't want to tell us what it is, but what is it?
So the cult of the black card, which I should say, just in general, the black card is the American Express black card that was actually a myth that became a real card, which American Express had wouldn't tell you how you qualified for their membership. Mm-hmm. So it does come out down the road and in the book that the black card, you have to spend like $250,000 a year to be invited to get one. And the cult of the black card is a representation of the society that we live in, and many of the women that I have encountered in my life whose husbands have given them the black card. So when they whip it out in front of their friends, it signifies somehow that they're special, or so they think.
Mm-hmm.
So they think. So there's a cult. It's like carrying the same pocketbook, mm-hmm. thinking you have to have this material thing to be special, when all it is a leather bag or a tin card. And if you didn't get it on your own, then what happens when it goes away? Are you no longer part of that clique, group, friends, society? There's way too many suburbs in the world. I won't even limit it to this country, where women pit women against each other by what they look like, what they wear, what bag they carry, what car they drive, and what credit card they carry. It's sad, but it is a reality. Let's just look at our social media today. So
if it's that important to you to be part of some sort of material cult, then go out and earn it yourself, because then nobody can take it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get it from someone who gives it to you, what happens when it goes away? Where are you then? So it's all about appearances, how people look at other people and make flash judgments based on what they see without really knowing what's underneath. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll date myself to Jerry Maguire, the movie. If you know it, Show Me the Money, Jerry. When people used to show up in my office with their very expensive bags, and this is women, and their surgeries, and, you know, their clothing, but they couldn't write a retainer check.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, show me the money.
Yeah.
I want to see the money. I don't care what you look like this way. What's behind it?
Yeah.
So what I'm encouraging all people to do is look deeper, look behind what you see, see what's inside a person. Don't judge them by what you see on the outside.
Mm. And if you are one of those wives or women that have found themselves in that cult or that environment or that community or niche or, you know, whatever it is, there is a way out. It's a matter of taking ownership of your own talents and passions and desires and living your life, not because you're a trophy or, you know, you look good on someone's arm. You have the right to be validated and be authentic, taking the mask off. And, you know, I mean, here I am in my ponytail right from the gym, you know, with my sneakers on. So I just, like, I don't give a frickin' what people think about me. I've not had anything done. Not yet. I don't think so. But, you know, I don't even have the fake nails anymore. Like, I took all of that off. And when you leave the States and you live on an island in the Caribbean, and you eat bananas, like, it strips down all the pretentiousness. There were days where I makeup, whatever, who cares? And leaving that world behind and not caring, I have to say, everybody, ladies, just get it down to who are you? You got to know yourself. What are your values? And if you're wearing a mask and pretending to be something that you're not, that divorce is going to just, well, be ugly. Yeah. So make the best of it and find an attorney if you're in the New York, New Jersey area, like Leslie. Of course, that's the trick of, like, you know, family law attorneys. You got to work where they are. Sure. With the bar and their practice, but it is so important. There are attorneys out there that are willing to do flat fees or take less cases, see it as more of a one-to-one experience, dare I say boutique experience, where you're not a number and you're lucky if you are able to talk to the paralegal, let alone the attorney. You know, it's a different world, and you've got to take the bull by the horns, as they say, and make your experience your own. So how does people find out about you and your book? What's the best way for them to learn more about you and all the marvelous work that you do in your book?
Okay, so The Cult of the Black Card could be found on Amazon. You could visit my website at AskLeslieTheLawyer.com. And from there, there's lots of information that you can find out about divorces, articles, videos that could help you without even ever talking to another lawyer or person outside the realm, and maybe give you some more information. And also on there is the information for my law firm, which is located in New York. And you can email me. So I try and help as many people as possible. I try and get to as many emails as possible, you know, and hopefully make a difference in people's lives. I just, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting nice things and living a wonderful life. Just make it your own so that it's yours.
Yeah. Love it. Thank you, Leslie. LeslieTheLawyer.com. Thank you. And to everybody, no matter what, it's your life. You got to live it and keep thriving in the chaos.
Thanks,
I'll see you next week. My pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. And make sure if you want to talk to us or ask us questions, you can always email us at thrivinginchaospodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.